Welcome to the Tech Talks Daily Podcast, where you can learn and be inspired by real-world examples of how technology is transforming businesses and reshaping industries in a language everyone can understand. Here is your host, Neil C. Hughes.
Welcome back to the Tech Talks Daily Podcast. Now, although I do record these interviews daily, I do try and continue the relationship with my guests that I have on here, even after 1,400 interviews I think we have recorded now. But I do enjoy often playing the role of connector and think, hey, you might need to speak with this person. And when I first spoke with Tim Robson, a global managing partner at HI Executive Consulting, we just hit it off straight away. And I find myself, even to this day, exchanging Alan Partridge jokes with him on an intermittent basis. But when he said to me, Neil, can I come back on the show and bring someone with me? I was intrigued, but I jumped at the chance for a catch-up call. And today, he's bringing Dr. Anita Sands with him, who is a US-based board director, author, speaker, and advisor. And Anita has been described as a force of nature, an agent of change, and a unique thinker who brings intellect, practicality, and wit to audiences the world over. Now, she's always in demand. She speaks regularly on the topics of technology's influence on companies and society, leadership and strategy in times of ambiguity and change, not to mention diversity, inclusion, and ultimate and the power of belonging, which is so important now in a world where people are hired online, interviewed online, and then work online. So since my last conversation with Tim, the world has dramatically changed. But how has working from home changed things? And how has tech made that transition easier? And how can leaders nurture belonging with new hires in a world of Zoom and team calls? These are just a few areas we're going to explore today. So buckle up and hold on tight so I can beam your ears all the way to New York so we can speak with Tim Robson and Dr. Anita Sands. So a massive warm welcome back to the show, Tim. Can you tell the listeners a little about who you are and what you do?
Thank you, Neil. Yeah, it's great to be back on the show and to hear your dulcet tones once more, my friend. I'm a managing partner of HIEC, which for those of your listeners who don't know us, we're a global search boutique with 13 offices around the world, and we're a specialist in the digital ecosystem. So we tend to spend our time working with clients either in the tech sector or in analog industries that are changing and evolving and pivoting into, you know, into the digital age. We tend to handle board, CEO, and direct reports to CEO appointments. Personally, so I'm one of the managing partners of our business, one of the founder partners of our business. We've been around for 10 years, and I'm a 20-year, I almost said veteran, of doing enterprise technology and services search work around the world.
And I also believe you've brought somebody with you onto the show this year, Tim, at this time, Tim. So welcome, Anita. And can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself too?
Yeah. Hi, Neil. I think Tim invited me just to shake up the interesting accents here that you have with you today. So I hail from a not too distant neck of the woods to yourselves, lads. I'm originally from Ireland, currently based in New Jersey. I've been in the States for 20 years, but I am a board director, Neil, full time, primarily in the tech industry, a little bit in fintech, a little bit in real estate, but mostly in tech. Maybe some companies, some of your listeners would recognize. I'm on the board of ServiceNow, Pure Storage, ThoughtWorks, to name but a few. And when I'm not doing that, I'm also a visiting professor in entrepreneurship at Princeton University here in New Jersey. And I write fairly regularly for Forbes on the topics of leadership and strategy. So thank you so much for having me on the show.
Fantastic. And a big thank you to you both for coming on here today. And the world has changed so much since we last spoke, Tim. So I'm curious, are there any observations that you can share about some of the big changes that you've seen during the global pandemic?
Yeah, wow. What an interesting time, Neil, since you and I spoke last probably 9 months or so ago. A quite remarkable, unprecedented year. In the spaces in which we operate, I think, and we've all probably read about this, but we've seen it in action because of the work we do, which is that if transforming businesses digitally used to be a, I don't know, a nice to have or an aspiration. Arguably, it's now utterly fundamental. It's a necessity to even survive in your respective industry segments and markets. So what we've seen is a significantly increased desire to transform digitally organizations, aggressively changing business models. And of course, at least in my world anyway, in executive search, that places a very high bar on finding very agile, fit for purpose executives and non-executives for the clients we work with. So that's an obvious one. Interestingly, on a practical level, what we've seen is because everything is now remote, and actually I think we'd all agree the technology has stood up very well to working remotely in a lot of cases, we've seen the speed of the recruitment process for executives and board directors increase rather than slow down, which might surprise people. And that's principally because I suppose the board and the executives that used to travel now have their time back because they're stranded at home, and they can therefore, we can collectively process. So the speed of the recruitment process, even for executives, has accelerated even quicker. And by the way, which is a very interesting development and one I don't think any of us could have imagined in even February of this year, is that we've worked with a number of clients in the last few months in all different parts of the world across our 13 offices. And the common theme is, whether they're board appointments, CEO appointments, or executive appointments, we've hired literally tens, multiples of individuals where the client, the employer organization, has never met their new employee in person. So they've been exclusively remote video telephone interactions over a series of calls. As a final dynamic, I think we've seen, which is noteworthy, and that is that while we've seen, therefore, actually arguably as much movement of executives in enterprise technology as we would normally, it may even have increased slightly. What we have seen is there's been a statistically, we found that female leaders have been less likely in a slightly more marked way than before to move to a new employer during COVID times versus their male counterparts. So there are probably others, but they're perhaps three or four obvious market dynamics or changes in the markets we've seen since coronavirus hit.
Yeah, there really has been so many. A lot of people say it's acted as a digital accelerant, a much needed one too, because 9 months ago when we met, there was a lot of people that wouldn't go near a video conferencing solution such as Zoom or Teams. But of course, that has all completely changed. And there also seems to be a lot of positive changes happening now as people think and start acting differently. So Anita, I'm curious, do you anticipate a rise in female leadership moves the next year too?
Well, thanks, Neil. That's a great question. And I think Tim's insights there are just fascinating. I was reflecting on my own life and sort of the world of boards in this past several months. And I think I'd agree with Tim around the speed of things. Certainly the CEOs I work with are saying, look, I can be way more productive because I can do a meeting with another CEO without having to get on a plane to go see him or her. And he or she feels exactly the same way about having to meet up with me. So I think at that CEO level, you're definitely seeing some uptick in productivity by virtue of not having to travel for all of the functions they would have done. In terms of female leadership, I think I have a couple of reflections on this, Neil. On one hand, what this time of ambiguity, acute ambiguity, has shown us is just how important having a range of diverse perspectives around the table is. I mean, a big part of what Tim has talked about is the acceleration of all things digital, and that's absolutely 100% true. And of course, then that raises the question of where do we find the skills at all levels in the organization to go and execute on that? So even I'll give you a tactical example. You know, earlier this year, a number of the companies I was working with were planning big customer conferences, right? And these would normally be held in Las Vegas or new, you know, in Orlando and these big convention centers. And obviously that just wasn't going to happen this year. So they're switching to these fully digitized virtual events. But what they realized then was that their marketing and event team people were great at putting on big physical conferences and not necessarily as skilled in running really successful, engaging experiences that are entirely virtual. So that was just sort of one very tactical place where we saw this, you know, really acute need for new skill sets inside our organizations. So I think the fact that if you're dealing with ambiguity, you know, the analogy I use, Neil, if you're a leader and you're sort of on top of your mountain there looking down at the chaos of 2020 below you, you know, you'll have a perspective on what's going on. You'll have your own answers to some of your questions. But it's really so much more strategic and helpful if you can get a read on what's going on from multiple perspectives, right? If you can have everybody giving their view of what they're seeing, what you're seeing on the front line. And I sort of use the analogy that it's not helpful, you know, if you're on a battlefield to have your team all looking at the problem through the same set of binoculars, right? You want everybody's unique vantage point. So I think on one hand, we're starting to really appreciate the importance of diversity. However, when it comes to women, Tim and I had a great back and forth on this last week because I was sort of looking at the most recent McKinsey Women in the Workplace report, which was sort of raising a really, you know, quite an alarming bell around women's experience this year and how disproportionately affected they have been by the crisis. And obviously the unavailability of childcare or of schools being closed is one proponent of that. But the data is saying, you know, their data was saying 1 in 3 mothers, 1 in 4 women are thinking about scaling back or stepping out entirely, you know, from their careers, owing to the pressures. And that alarmed me greatly because if I'm in a board role and I'm thinking about the long-term interests of shareholders, the prospects of 1/3 of working mothers or 1/4 of our female employees scaling back or stepping out, that is really alarming. So I'm sort of consoled by Tim's data that's sort of saying he's seeing something else in the market. But I think a big determinant, Neil, will be how long this goes on for, because I do think crises are notorious for surfacing inequalities across all of our experiences. And I do think the experience of women has been a bit more difficult this year on several dimensions.
I completely agree with you, and fascinating insights too. And also around the virtual events thing, because I've noticed that all the big tech events next year have already been cancelled. So that wipes out those events for that year. Do you think we will come full circle and when people will want to meet again and meet on that show floor and exchange ideas face to face? Or do you think that is it now?
I think like many things will end up in a hybrid space, right? Yeah. I was reading, I don't know if it was from Gartner, but I was reading something the other day where on the topic of these big virtual events, the general reflection was you can have an event that is 60% as impactful for 10% of the cost. Wow. And if you were just doing that pure math, you'd kind of opt for the 10% of the cost and get 60% of the benefit all the time. Yeah. I do also think you're starting to see a shift inside enterprise tech in particular across the sales function and enterprise sales teams recognizing that it's got to be a digital life cycle from that first point of contact with a customer through marketing right through to kind of post-sales implementation, customer success. And I think that's been a challenging shift for some of the more traditional enterprise sales teams who are used to that very close contact, trusted relationship kind of status that they had with their customers. So I think we'll end up in like a lot of spaces in a hybrid between taking the best of the productivity and efficiency that the digital experience has illuminated for us, but also then not losing out on some of the immense benefits that you can get from having that in-person, you know, trusted human contact as well.
Yeah, completely agree. That's a great stat as well. And Tim, you're someone that's always got a fun fact up your sleeve, if I remember rightly from our last conversation. So do you have anything around board and leadership teams this year?
That's a high pressure question, Neil, and I'll probably let you down because I'm not sure I've got anything funny to say today. But I, there are probably a couple of anecdotes which I can articulate. I mean, one is, so I remember I was talking when we all had a collective deep breath in March, April this year, and coronavirus first hit us in most of us for the first time. I was talking to a chairman of one of our enterprise tech clients, and he predicted that he anticipated come autumn time or the fall, we would see an increased number of particularly CEOs, but arguably executives, kind of moving jobs, changing employers. And his rationale for that was, you know, you'd gone from being a board, and Anita might be able to give a lens on this, but you'd gone from being a board that perhaps interacted, depending on the size of the organization, with the CEO, I don't know, it might have been monthly, it might have been quarterly, it might have been, you know, twice a month or whatever. Because we were all panic stations, it was probably actually twice a week. And so two things happen then. This was his prediction. One is you get to really, really know each other. And so that means that you need to have a really strong chemistry between, you know, executives and board and vice versa. And you probably need to, frankly, like each other, but you also need to be aligned. And when you're ripping up your strategy and you're ripping up your sales forecast and you're ripping up almost everything you're doing and reimagining what the new norm is and what that means to what your new strategy needs to be, you might find there's not alignment on that new strategy. So that was his prediction. You're going to see an exacerbation of executives moving roles because of those dynamics. Have we seen it play out? Difficult to tell. I mean, you would have to say now we've all got more accustomed to a new norm. There's plenty of executive and independent board director movement in tech and digital. Whether you can point that simply to that prediction is difficult to say. What I would say, and I think I personally have a view on, is I had another exec say to me, quote unquote, in this remote environment, Tim, it is probably not a good time to be an introverted CEO. Mm-hmm. And I think I would have to say whether that's the right view and perception we have of those individuals, unfairly or otherwise, I think that is probably a fair statement.
And Anita, does anything surprise you there? And what kind of impacts do you think this will have on leaders?
Yeah, I mean, this is why I love talking to Tim. He's just so full of interesting, insightful information and anecdotes. And the man knows how to tell a great story. Look, I think, let me maybe start with the last point there about, is this a good time to be an introverted CEO or an introverted leader? First of all, I think the world is always a little more fairer to those who are extroverts, right? It just, you know, it's easier to be out there and to be vocal and visible and communicative if you're an extrovert naturally. but the reason why I think visibility is important right now for employees is because, you know, at moments like this, crises are kind of a litmus test for people's sense of membership of an organization, right? A topic which I know, Neil, we might hopefully get to talk about, that I'm very passionate about, around belonging, right? So, yeah. You know, crises are litmus tests for belonging. And when something is going on in the lives of your employees, it surfaces all these other things that are super important. Wow, I really now realize I didn't appreciate that 3-hour commute every day. Or, you know, I was running in this race up until this year and I got tripped up by this COVID thing through no fault of my own. And some employees will pick their heads up and just start running again, Neil, and others will pick their heads up and look around and pause and go, why was I even running in this place, you know, in this race in the first place? I don't really like this organization. I don't like this job. So that is the existential question that starts to materialize in every one of your employees' heads sooner rather than later. Even the most loyal, right, after a time are going to start asking, what's holding me here? And that's when you need your CEO to be out there talking about the purpose and the mission of the company and reconnecting every employee to that higher purpose and you know, assuring them that they are important and they are trusted and they are critical to the purpose and the success of the organization and that they feel that sense of membership. So it's critical to be visible at times like this and in order to kind of build that bond of belonging with you and your people. The other reason why I think it's important, you know, for introverts to try and get over their introversion is when things are uncertain, fear and anxiety in the mind minds and hearts of your employees can metastasize, right? They will just worry about the worst possible scenario. So it's critically important to get out there as a leader and confront the reality that your people are experiencing and to offer that balance of realism and optimism. So I do think it's essential for leaders to be out there in front of their people. I saw this great quote by one. He said, look, it's important to be visible, but not necessarily needed by everybody. And I thought that was sort of a nuanced and interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, completely agree. I think for so long, there was this whole debate as well about working from home or working in the office. And like you said a few moments ago, it's the hybrid approach now, isn't it? It all depends on the task at hand and getting the best of both worlds. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, the founder of ServiceNow, Fred Luddy, who'll be known to some of your listeners, said it very well. He said, look, things are going to be different, not because of a virus, but because of what we've learned. Yeah. And I was just looking at a survey the other day by Glassdoor, and it said that 50% of people expect to stay remote. Two-thirds of people said that they would relocate if remote working permanently was an option, which I thought that was very interesting. And 50% said they can be just as productive, if not more so, working from home. 15% said that they don't ever envision returning to an office. So whether we like it or not, this has been a grand social experiment in the future of work. It feels like the future of work is very much here. And I think it's going to pan out that it will be more effective for some roles and some people and perhaps less effective for others. So that's all, I think, under examination and TBD right now.
And I would echo that, Anita. And frankly, we're almost living through a time of, you know, almost a bit of a scientific experiment, because these things we're talking about, I think, have a big macro effect in the whole of society, right? I mean, without jumping into lots of detail, there's been a well documented by the press, you know, movement of individuals out of the center of, let's just choose two big cities, New York and San Fran.
Yeah.
And why is that? Well, because, you know, historically they were rather expensive places to live, but you needed to be in an office. Well, if you don't need to be in office, you don't necessarily have to be in a really expensive place to live. And with coronavirus, you might frankly have a higher level of interest on outdoor space, both of which is difficult to come by for any kind of economics in either of those cities. And so you end up with this, you know, literally a, not quite an army, but, you know, there's some, you know, fairly big, you know, factual statistical evidence that there's then a big movement out of cities. And it's partly caught up in all of the dynamics we're speaking about.
I saw this, we had a speaker at one of my board meetings this week, a professor from Columbia, and he was a future of work expert, and he described remote working as the quintessential perk of knowledge workers this century. So I, you know, and his whole thing was whether it was sort of driven by millennials coming into force in the workforce in the next 5 years, or just the availability of skills in markets like New York or San Fran. If you don't offer remote working to those top talent, you are going to be at a disadvantage. So he was sort of saying, look, this is going to be a perk that people expect now. And I thought that was fascinating.
It really is. And a couple of people that I've spoken to on this podcast, I've spoken with people in San Fran who are paying $3,500 a month for a one bedroom flat. And then on the back of that, we've got Phoenix in Arizona. I've been speaking to the Greater Phoenix Council there, and they're tempting not only employees back over to Phoenix and saying you can have a much better standard of life here, come and set up with your family, and equally tempting the companies themselves over. So there's this huge shift going on, isn't there, from all angles?
Yeah, absolutely. It's look, I think we're starting to see, it's at times of this, you just see sort of seismic dislocations happening.
Yeah, right.
And this sort of geographic movement is one vector of that.
And Tim, I recently read about your artificial intelligent assessment tool called TeamScope. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I've read a little bits about it, but just for anyone listening hearing about it for the first time, can you expand on that?
Yeah, thanks, Neil. Yeah, happy to. You know, I'll just contextualize where I think TeamScope and, frankly, other leadership assessment tools seem to be almost experiencing a bit of a rebirth in the consciousness of boards and execs. And so I think it's this. So we're talking about a lot here about remote working. And so If you then put that into a leadership recruitment context, what does that mean? That means you, if you're the employer, you've got to assess an individual without the luxury of ever meeting them in person, or certainly that's what we've been experiencing so far. I mean, that's quite a frightening prospect for most people. And so what do we naturally try to do? You try to mitigate risk of getting it wrong, tissue rejection. How do you do that? Well, you basically want data points. You want as many data points as you get to try and get a three-dimensional view in a kind of 2D environment. So that's one obvious contextualization. I think the second is then think about, forget recruiting an executive, then think about when they've been appointed, they're transitioning, they're onboarding into their new employer. For them, they're in an executive role or a board role. What they're really trying to do or would normally do is, you know, weigh up their new team members, their new colleagues, build relationships, frankly, work out where the dead bodies are. All of those things, again, much more difficult to do, I think we'd agree, in a remote environment. So this kind of feeling of being able to create trust and intimacy and understanding by, I don't know, we used to call them fireside chats, you know, in either an interview process or when you're actually on board, all of that luxury has gone away. So that's just to contextualize it. That's what we've seen. So when then we all try and step back a little and say, well, how are we going to mitigate that risk and improve our chances of success? Well, what you're really trying to do is lean more on science rather than the art of assessing individuals. And so we've seen, as I say, I don't know whether rebirth would be, that's an exaggeration, but a reinvigoration of interest in any kind of assessment tools to try and create this broader three-dimensional view of people. Team scope is, in at least in our view, it's a fit for purpose, digitally relevant, modern view of how you handle leadership assessment. It helps you, it gives you insights on behaviors, values, characteristics, like many other assessment tools out there, frankly. It does it in lots of ways, a much cooler, intuitive, digital interaction and interface. But perhaps most importantly of all, actually what it does better than most assessment tools is it gives you a clear view of the individual's likely interaction with the team, whether that's upwards, downwards, or peers. And so when we're all focused on high-performing teams quickly, then actually relating an individual's values, characteristics, behaviors with those that are already in the team becomes super important. And I think that's where TeamScope has something really quite differentiated to say.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, if I could just jump in, Neil, I think Tim has the data and has this incredible technology, you know, capability and tooling to manifest this. But what I was observing sort of on a human dimension was just it's so much harder to build trust with somebody you've never met in person. And, you know, if I was sort of, when Tim and I were talking about this, I was sort of breaking down what I saw as being the elements of trust, and they are intimacy plus competency plus predictability. So if you think about it, in a normal situation, pre everything being, you know, virtual, normally you would have time to display your competence to your new manager and to your new team. You would have time to display how predictable you are, right? That you're going to show up as the same talented, consistently good worker all the time. And, you know, those types of things, as Tim Wright has said, they become like absolute luxuries when you are reduced to sort of slivers of an existence and a relationship on a screen. So we then have to fall back on the biggest predictor of trust, however, is intimacy, which is this idea of, you know, you go out and you have dinner with somebody and you chat a little bit about their family, or you bump into them in the cafeteria and you talk about what's going on in their day. And, you know, these little things that we get to know about people's lives when we work and interact with them all the time, that's what we have to try and find a human way of reinforcing. And I think it can be very simply, you know, it's a case of managers and leaders just asking people, how are you doing? How is your family? and being willing to have that level of vulnerability, first, be willing to display vulnerability. So you have to display trust in order to generate trust. But I think then what Tim's technology does to complement that building of intimacy at a human level is if you can have a read on people's skills, on their competence and predictability sides of them as a professional colleague, that's hugely helpful as an accelerant to getting to this overall trusted relationship.
I completely agree again. And there's so much, you're talking about trust there. And one of the things that we're increasingly seeing with people working at scale from home is suddenly having to trust them on their home internet with probably, I don't know, smartphones, games consoles, and 101 smart appliances or IoT devices, and all that corporate data is around there as well. So I'm curious, Tim, what kind of challenges have you seen due to COVID and remote working at scale?
Yeah, thanks, Neil. I think, so how does that manifest itself is a great question. In essence, what we've seen is, whereas in the recruitment process with our clients, I think it's actually accelerated speed. It almost kind of is proven it works, and the efficiency of it is an improvement on where we were pre-COVID. Actually, having said that, for the transition onboarding elements for new employees with new employers, I think generally speaking, what we're hearing from everybody we work with, and Anita might give a view on this, is that actually the COVID remote environment elongates the process. It makes it longer and it makes it harder. It's because how do you assess those people quickly when you're at arm's length? How do you build those relationships? To Anita's point, how do you make if your 90-day stereotypical diagnostic actually becomes 120 days or 150 days or whatever it becomes, are you actually given time by your new employer anyway when you're all trying to make an impact really quickly? So I think that's the other side of the coin to the benefits of this remote environment and the strength of technology, but also, unfortunately, its inherent weakness.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I was looking at another survey, I think it was Monday.com who did it, and they were talking about, they're definitely, their data was showing sort of less coordination across people, some impact on productivity. But I think to the point of new employees, there was 40% said that they had less transparency into day-to-day tasks, right? Now, I don't know whether that's their own or others, but you could see how that would be super hard for a new person that doesn't quite know how things work in an organization. And 50% said they'd seen an increase in miscommunications. So again, I think if you have a person onboarding into an organization and trying to get to know the culture and to get understand what I call kind of the values in action, right? In terms of that spine of beliefs, how things get done. It's super hard to gauge that when you can't read the context of a room and you can't have little sidebars with people. So one very tactical thing I've seen Neil and Tim people do is assigning newcomers to companies a Sherpa. So it's not a mentor and it's basically an onboarding buddy, right? So it's just somebody who kind of takes it upon themselves to check in with the newbie very regularly, offers to give them, background and context on what's going on. Just maybe be that person that sat beside you in the next cube, perhaps when you joined an office, that is just sort of your go-to person. So I think we have to actually go out of our way to appoint that type of a Sherpa to help some of these folks on board more effectively.
And you did mention a few moments ago, Anita, that our belonging is a topic very close to your heart. So how do you make an impact when you're at arm's length from your colleagues? And how much longer will all that take in a COVID environment? And how do you create belonging for the new hire, essentially?
Yeah, well, first of all, it is the most essential thing at times like this, right? It's the best way I can put it, Neil, is belonging is to employees what gravity is to an astronaut. If you don't have it, you'll just break off and drift away. So then your question is, how do you create it with somebody that's new to the organization? The first, there's sort of three elements of belonging, but the first element is what I call cultural belonging. And it has two major prerequisites, acceptance and trust. So we've talked about trust, and ways in which you can build trust with people is by actually being vulnerable yourself and showing that you're willing to trust them. The acceptance piece is sort of, you know, showing people in a meaningful way that, look, we're not just including you on this team. And we don't want you just because you're a little bit, you know, in spite of that you're different or whatever. We want you because you're different. We want you because you're new to the organization. We want everything that you can bring. And you're fully accepted for that. So ways in which you can do that as a leader is sort of, in some respects, Neil, the most important thing is almost not to obstruct belonging. So you need to ask people for their views, and then you need to, you know, not shoot them down if they give them, even if you think they're not right, right? So sometimes I'll give you just a real tactical example. I used to work on a team, and the leader had a bad habit of coming in saying, look, I've been thinking about this problem, and we need to give a read to headquarters on this. And it's, you know, it's, there's lots of ways we could go. Here's what I came out on it. What do you guys think? So the chances of any of us actually really saying what we thought after he had clearly made his point of view known to everybody. I mean, what happened was most people just lined up behind him, right? So that's the way in which you're actually stifling people feeling psychologically safe and psychologically free to be themselves and to share their opinions and to share their ideas. So as leaders and managers, what matters most is that you're creating an environment where people do feel safe enough to speak up, and you're showing that acceptance. And then the next part of it, where you operationalize belonging at a team level, is by creating this utmost clarity of purpose. In other words, we know why we belong together. And this goes back to a little bit of what I was talking about earlier about the importance of CEOs being visible. Because if you think about it this way, so some CEOs have said to me, Anita, I'm worried that if we can't get back into the office, if we can't have those water cooler chats, if we can't go for our happy hours on Friday, whatever, we're going to lose our belonging. We're going to lose our culture. And my response to them is, if you thought happy hours on Friday were what gave you belonging, you didn't have belonging in the first place. What you merely had was a habit of people who showed up in the same place at the same time to kind of do the same thing. So belonging is actually far deeper than that. It's when you have, you know, you really know why it is you belong together, and everybody, your personal vision and your personal values are fully aligned with the vision and the values and the purpose of the organization. That's belonging. So that's what you're trying to generate in these new recruits. And then it's sharing this, like I said, values in action. And where that goes horribly wrong, Neil, is if the tone at the top, if the leaders say something like, we think diversity, gender equality is really important. So if they say that, but yet in action, they reward behaviors that are contrary to that, or worse, they don't reprimand behaviors that are in violation of that. That is where people go, hang on a second. We don't live our values. We just read them in nice neon signs on the wall, right? So belonging is sort of all of these elements that you are trying to create for a new person. And it's not particularly easy, but it's critical that it, and really, Neil, it happens at the managerial level. That's where the magic occurs.
Love that. I'm conscious we are running out of time here, and I want to end on a huge positive note as well. And we will soon be giving collective sigh as 2020 comes to an end. And so let's try and channel some of that optimism that comes with the beginning of a new year. But then I did say that last year and said it was going to be an optimistic new year, a new decade of opportunity. So we know where that ended. But Tim, what makes you optimistic, hopeful, and excited about 2021?
A vaccine, Neil?
Christmas.
Exactly. Outside of a vaccine, it's just not really my area of strength. You know what? The thing that I would say is after this big collective, you know, panicked sigh in February, March, yeah, you know, we've now returned to, I would say, 80% of normality, if normality is what we used to have before coronavirus. That's pretty rapid recovery. It's not quite V-shaped, but it's pretty rapid. And I think that's a testament to resilience of people and businesses. it's very sad what's happening to some industry segments and to some businesses, but you can never underestimate, you know, I think the resilience and recovery ability of people and businesses. And so that gives me a lot of hope, in particular in this world in which is rapidly digitally transforming. I think, you know, we're all working in a space where therefore we are going to face some very interesting times ahead of us. And frankly, if it all gets too difficult and I can't find any other optimism, Neil, I'm going to borrow one of Anita's Sherpas, because I mean, who doesn't need one of those?
who doesn't need a Sherpa? It's right. Tim, I love that. I'm actually optimistic about the level of innovation we're going to see post this period. And, you know, the fact is change happens faster in times of change. And that kind of, you know, necessity being the mother of all invention. What I think is particularly exciting about this year is that we're seeing kind of two of the big bastions of industrial sectors, healthcare and education. They were two big sectors that had somehow managed to still remain a little bit immune to digital disruption and all things technology. And I think this year has cracked that wide open, and we're going to see seismic shifts in ed tech and in health tech. And I think that's very, very exciting. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out as a result of this. I think we will end up in a hybrid way of working, and therefore there's going to be a whole new set of tools and platforms and capabilities that emerge to meet the needs of knowledge workers going forward. So I think that'll be very interesting to see sort of where collaboration tools go and all that good stuff. So I'm excited about what will happen. And you know, Tim used a really powerful word there. He talked about resilience and ingenuity. And the what I've learned about resilience this year, it's been defined by a really great friend of mine who lives in New Zealand. And she reminds me, like, resilience is not about bouncing back, actually. It's about bouncing forward. And it's not about going through something and remaining unchanged or withstanding it. It's about going through something and allowing the change to happen, absorbing the change, absorbing the learnings, and taking that and then growing and evolving and morphing so that you bounce forward. Because look, we can't bounce back to what no longer exists. So I'm quite excited about bouncing forward and seeing what the new wave of innovation will be as a result of this.
Wow. I've absolutely loved chatting with you both today. But before I let you go, Tim, first of all, can you remind everyone where they can find you guys online and contact a member of your team if they are left with any questions?
Sure. I mean, I'm ubiquitous, so I'm easy to find, Neil. But otherwise, try looking me up at our website on www.hiec.com, or my email is trobson@hiec.com.
And Anita, I believe you might just outstrip Tim on the ubiquitous states there, because I think you've got a Forbes column, and I know you're available quite a few places online. So can you just point everyone listening where the best way of keeping up to speed with some of your thoughts?
Thanks, Neil. You can follow me on social media at Dr. Anita Sands, or my website at www.dranitasands.com. So dranitasands.com.
Excellent. Well, I think we've covered so much ground today, and you've also left everybody wanting more, including myself, especially talking about that hybrid approach and new ways of working, collaboration, increased resilience, etc., and all those new tools that are going to come out. So I'd love to get you both back on next year, see how things are going and how things are changing. But more than anything, just thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks a million, Neil. It was great fun. Really, really honored to be here.
I could have spoken with Anita and Tim for hours. Not only are they both incredibly intelligent and armed with a wealth of expertise and insights, but also they're just a whole lot of fun to be around, not to mention lovely people. So for those reasons alone, I do feel a New Jersey road trip coming on and visit a few Bruce Springsteen haunts in the area. But hey, that is another podcast right there. But as always, I want you to email me your thoughts on technology's influence on companies and society, not to mention leadership and strategy in times of ambiguity and change. And also, how are you giving new hires that sense of belonging within an organization when, for the most part, you may not have met that new hire because they were hired online and working from home all the time too? So let me know how you're tackling that by emailing me, techblogwriter@outlook.com. My website is techblogwriter.co.uk. Social channels, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. Just look for @NeilCHughes and pop me a message on there. And finally, just a big thank you to Dr. Anita Sands and Tim Robson. And an even bigger thank you for each and every one of you listening wherever you are in the world. Hopefully you'll join me again tomorrow, but until next time, don't be a stranger.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Talks Daily Podcast with Neil C. Hughes. Remember, technology works best when it brings people together.